Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear the hypnotic beats of What's in the Box, that knows right now that you are tuning in to Double Toasted Saturday Show. How are you doing today? My name is DJ Miles. I am your host. And with me, as always, is my co-host and partner in crime, Christian Torres. How are you doing, sir?
Well, man, thank you as always for having me, Toasties. Hello, happy Saturday. See, I forget what day it is because I love doing this so much. But yeah, man, really excited. We got a bunch to talk about.
We have a lot to talk about, and I cannot believe already, as I'm going to say this, like I always said in the past, time is just a thing, man. Time is very relative, and look at that. We're already in February. How the fuck did this happen, dude? So, of course, I hope everyone has kept up with their New Year's Eve resolutions and tried to become the better person that they wanted to become. And, of course, if one of those things is to watch more Double Toasted, then, hey, congratulations. So let me go ahead and slowly fade this thing out now. And before we get things started, let me go ahead and jump into the chat right now. I want to make sure everything is running smoothly on this end. Are we on? We are on. So what is going on, everyone in the chat? How are all of you doing today? Happy Saturday. And of course, you can always go to the doubletoasted.com, the official merchandise page of Double Toasted, to pick up all your new stuff. And look at this. We got our Kung Fu T-shirt shirt right now. Excuse me. So go ahead and pick that up. One of the newest things we got going on for the month of February. And of course, all the other stuff here, as you already know. So go ahead and look at that. And of course, chat, now that you're all here in the building, I just wanted to say, before we started this show, a huge, huge shout out to Mr. John, who did this amazing artwork for me and Christian. It looks good. Look at that, Christian. He's got my muscles. He's got my signature maroon t-shirt and my receding hairline. He got it all looking so snazzy and perfect to a T. But look at that. He got you looking pretty well.
Yeah. Looking like Jesus Christ himself. He also got my alcoholism in there, didn't he? Right? He made me look like a righteous drunk. So thank you for that, my long-lost cousin, Jonathan Torres. You're the fucking best. I appreciate it.
So we got a packed show, and we got only a limited amount of time. We are going to be talking about the Dragon Prince. We're going to be talking about Ted Bundy and why women think he's so fucking hot. I don't know. We're going to be talking about Chucky. We're going to be talking about Twilight Zone, and we got so, so much more. So let's go ahead and jump with the first thing that I got on my plate here, and that is the Dragon Prince. We got a trailer that just dropped yesterday, so let's go ahead and play that, and we'll be back with our thoughts.
Things never go as you plan. But something incredible happened. Now, we're taking care of someone new.
There are reports of shadows in the clouds. Dragons flying high above the towns of Catullus. And Sunfire Elves are gathering near the border. An invasion is imminent. We must be prepared to fight.
Our top priority must be finding the princes.
Dark forces are pursuing you.
Nobody likes dark forces. War is coming like the world's never seen, unless we get the wee dragon home to his mom.
But he's so little, he still needs to learn how to fly.
I want to learn primal magic, but you have to be born with that magic inside you.
That's the great thing about dark magic. You just take creatures that are born with magic inside and squeeze it out of them.
We can't trust Soren and Claudia.
Real trust is about accepting even the dark parts we will never know.
This mission, it's the most important thing we'll ever do.
Hello again, fella humans, human fellas.
Oh, you're gonna love this. I'm a huge fan of human Rayla.
Humanity could face extinction if we don't do something.
Someone has to take a stand when no one else will.
All right, and that was the Dragon Prince. Hold on, what is going on here? Okay, don't know what that was, but that was The Dragon Prince. So it is coming out right before you know it, Christian. We've talked about this show in the past when season one came out. Are you excited about The Dragon Prince season two?
Yeah, I didn't finish season one, but I dug season one, what I saw of it. You know what I'm saying? So it also looks like it's getting a little bit darker. But how much of it did you watch?
I saw pretty much all of it. So here's the thing. I think it's trying because I believe the creators are the same people who made Avatar. Someone quote me on that.
Yeah, no, you're right. You got it.
Yeah, and I've never seen Avatar. I know. One of those few things, even as someone who loves anime, never seen. I enjoyed it for what it was. It has its moments. I think one of the biggest complaints, as you saw here, even in the trailer, is that the animation still looks a little bit, you know, janky and all that stuff. It doesn't look as fluid as I would want it to be. And that's one of the many complaints I heard people had within season two. But ultimately, I kind of like the story and where it's going. And yeah, I'm pretty excited to see where the story goes. And of course, now we have one of those things, just like any middle plot of any trilogy, like Lord of the Rings style, right? There's always now the protagonist maybe dealing with like the dark side of himself, right? And it looked like they were alluding to blood magic in this. So we'll see what ends up happening within the Dark Prince himself and all that. And yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. So did you have any last second thoughts on this, Christian?
Yeah, man, just that it's interesting because this is an American-made anime in the same way that Castlevania is an American-made anime. So I know the purists out there will call me stupid for calling it anime. Sorry. But I think that those are a really good comparison because what I love about Castlevania is that it's so dark. You know, it's so for adults. And I know that there's a place for like children's entertainment. And I think it's really important that it's out there because we watched a bunch of shit when we were kids that was wholesome and taught good values. But just personally, man, because I love Castlevania so much, I just want this to be darker. That's all I want from all my anime. So it looks like they're trending that way a little bit, but it's never going to be, it's always going to be for kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. And just much in the same veins as Avatar, you know, I think it can definitely be mature, but they never wanted to be too dark, right? Like, if we just quickly talk about Disney and Marvel, it's like Winter Soldier can get dark and it can be really, you know, it can be like a high stakes political thriller at times, right? But ultimately, we can't make it that dark, right? So, you know, so we'll see how it turns around. Maybe it might get more dark, but maybe they'll just talk about blood magic and just kind of like, well, that's as far as we go with it. So, of course, now let's go ahead and hop on to the next thing. This is something I wanted to surprise Christian with. So let's go ahead and play this trailer, and then we'll be right back with my thoughts on this.
How do I even begin to explain Otis Milburn? I heard he gives sex advice from a toilet.
Otis Milburn is a love-making mastermind.
That's why his helmet's so big. It's full of secrets.
Otis Milburn, that guy's an absolute legend.
Otis helped me deflate my enlarged erect penis. His advice then cost me my relationship, so him and his clinic can do one.
One time, he cured my vaginismus. It was awesome.
All right, so sex education is right around the corner. Christian, it says it's my season two. Listen, this is one of those shows that I know has been under the radar, and maybe, and I hope so, that it's been generating some more buzz. But people, if you have not seen Sex Education, please do yourself a favor as soon as you're done watching this show. Go ahead and watch it. I think it's one of the best shows that Netflix has to offer right now out of the gates into 2019. And I implore all of you to watch it. It's really great knowing that season two is already going to become a thing from the success of season one. And this makes me extremely happy. But Christian, what about you? How do you feel about them already dropping a teaser trailer for season two of Sex Education?
I'll take it, man. And you know what? It also indicates, I think, a larger business plan for what Netflix is doing with a lot of their really, really popular series. Because we saw such a quick turnaround for Sabrina, remember? Like, we didn't think it was going to get that quick of a renewal. And then they already have April set for more episodes. That's like only, what, 6 months? So I think that you're seeing the same thing. They know they have like a bona fide hit with Sex Education. They want to get it into production as soon as they can to get more episodes. And I'm really excited, man. I thought the first season was funny. And, you know, I think we were both big fans of it, right? So more the merrier at this point. And as long as sexy Gillian Anderson's back, you know, it's all hood. So I'm ready.
You know, when you expressed her love, and then when I just started watching this show, I'm like, wow, she's not only aged like a fine wine, but she is hot in that show.
Yeah, you get it. I'm just saying, I wasn't crazy. It's amazing that, like, it doesn't matter what. Like, I fell in love with her when she was like a redhead, you know, siren in the X-Files.
Yeah.
This is pretty much the first thing you've seen from her, and you still fell under that spell. So what does that say about her, man? Mm-hmm. She's a stone cold fox.
No, of course. So let's go ahead and now talk about one of the main bulk of our conversations here today in What's in the Box, and that is the show Russian Doll. This has come out yesterday on Netflix. There's only 8 episodes, and they're at 25 minutes apiece. So let's go ahead and play the trailer, and Christian and I will be right back with our thoughts on the show.
In the mouth.
Sweet birthday, baby.
Now life's short, carpe diem, etc. Right?
What I do with my time is my business, my choice, baby.
What was I just doing?
What? What do you mean?
I'm out of here. Ah! Fuck!
Sweet birthday, baby.
What is in this?
Stay away from me! I'm coming down the stairs!
Jesus fucking Christ, that's dark.
Are you gonna tell me what's going on?
I keep dying and reliving the same night.
Does it hurt?
Yes.
You seem fine.
I'm not fine. I'm questioning my own sanity. We gotta take the fire escape.
I have a fire escape? I have to change my Airbnb listing then.
What was wrong with the stairs?
It's a long story involving multiple deaths.
Yeah, this is much safer.
I never lasted this long. Those things are a menace.
I'm having a very hard, never-ending night.
Do we know each other?
Fuck off!
Will you stop acting crazy? What are you doing?
Should I call my guy at Bellevue?
Is it the nicest psych ward?
It's definitely the closest one.
And let me ask her!
I look at you now, chasing down death at every corner, fighting your way to the light. Do you still have that in you?
I am not crazy! You know I hate it! Some people call me crazy!
Didn't you get the news? We're about to die.
It doesn't matter. I die all the time.
All right. That was Russian Doll, which is already out on Netflix. For people who don't know what the story is after you saw the trailer, this is pretty much a pseudo, you know, Groundhog's Day, Happy Death Day. Was that movie that came out not too long ago, Christian, about the girl who kept on dying on her birthday?
Right, Happy Death Day. But, like, before people get all wrapped up in that, like, that's the basic concept, right? But also Groundhog's Day. I see, like, a bunch of people in the chat saying Happy Death Day, and I'm worried that they just don't know that Groundhog's Day is a film. Like, they're just that young, so it scares me.
And it did.
But I think that it's like that's a very loose concept of it. And even the trailer kind of makes you think, oh, it's like this happy go lucky kind of adventure that happens over and over again. But it actually is kind of way deeper and more existential. And on top of that, it's kind of like it's very clue driven, right? Like butterfly effect, one of the decision affects something differently. You have to keep a track of all these different decisions you've now made and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And also she may not be alone in this, right? So I don't want to spoil too much. I haven't finished it. I know we just want to do initial impressions, but I'm really digging it. How do you want to start to tackle this, man? Because it is a pretty big topic.
Yeah, of course. So of course, this is behind the masterminds of Amy Poehler, Leslie Headland, Natasha Lyonne, who stars as Nadia right here, as you can see. And it's a very simple concept, but there's so much more to it. And as each episode, as you're done with each episode, it kind of layers into something deeper and brings up something more existential, as you were talking about, right, Christian? And I think that's what I really liked about this show, that on the outside, it really is this comedy thing about, like, this girl who turned, she keeps on dying on her 36th birthday, and it's always, and she's trying to figure out, why am I revived on this, you know, why am I revived every day on this day, and why do I keep on reliving these moments? And then, you know, we see a few episodes in that we have the other co-star in this, and his name is Alan, who lives pretty much a polar exact opposite version of what of who Nadia is, right? So he's very clean cut, you know, he's very organized, and then, you know, that's a strong, you know, contrast to who Nadia is, who's a sarcastic smartass. You know, she does a lot of drugs. But you know, deep down, she's a good person. And, you know, when you watch the show, you actually kind of like the character, right? You know, there might be some people turned off by her demeanor, but with the people who are behind this show, I like the humor I got throughout it. How did you feel about the humor in the show?
No, I really dug it, man. Honestly, it's going to be a weird comparison. It reminds me a little bit of BoJack, you know, in that there's this bittersweet kind of like, oh yeah, we're laughing because we're all really fucking sad sort of thing to it. And you can tell that all of her actions are like self-medication and whatnot. So, I mean, there's definitely a sad undercurrent to it, but it is like a whip smart comedy, man. And I want to give credit where credit's due. Natasha Lyonne is fucking awesome in this, dude. Like, she delivers every single line like with the kind of comedic zeal that you would need to pull it off. And believe it or not, she actually reminds me a lot of like Joe Pesci, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Goodfellas, Home Alone, Joe Pesci. Just, yeah. Like, she's got this wise guy fucking mentality. She's always got a quick one-liner and stuff, and in a way that doesn't feel overwritten like Aaron Sorkin or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just a really, really good script or a really good story. And yeah, we've seen it before, Happy Death Day. Yeah, we've seen it before, Groundhog's Day. But dude, it's a really good subversion of all those expectations too. So I'm really loving it, man. I can't recommend it enough. And then as soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, yeah, no, this is going to be a hit, man. So I'm glad you're digging it too.
Yeah, I was going to say this. I know you only saw a few episodes. I saw the entire thing. This is something, again, like I said in the beginning of the review, it's only 8 episodes or about 25 minutes apiece. And this was one of those shows, Christian, the next thing before I knew it, I was already done with it. I'm like, oh, shit. Now, what surprised me is that I felt like it ended on a nice bow tie of an ending. But I found out that there's actually going to be 3 seasons in total of this, which to that, I'll say, yeah, give me more of. And again, although we've seen this story before of the Groundhog's Day and, you know, it's not something entirely original. What they do with it by adding in Alan, who's pretty much the co-star or supporting role next to you know, Natasha, you do see some interesting dynamics that this show has to offer, which gets me super excited about it, because you're right. There's some existential stuff and questions that they pretty much ask people in their mid-30s, right? You know, we become what we repeatedly do. Do you think it's possible to correct your life? These are the kind of questions that they don't steer away from. And although they add in those, again, comedic moments, when they try to get serious, it does become serious. And just like in the same vein as Maniac was, when we reviewed that way back when with Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, again, as each episode progresses, I feel like they kind of lighten up the humor just to get into the core of what they kind of want people to get as the audience member, you know, with what life is as a metaphor and, you know, what are we here to do? And, you know, talking about timelines and, you know, is there different ways that we can, you know, course correct the path that we're on even when we think it's already too little too late? And to that, I say Russian Doll does that, you know, superbly. Go ahead and watch that. And I can't really recommend it enough. Christian, was there any last second things you wanted to mention or highlight that I'm forgetting?
Yeah, just really quick. I'm glad you brought up Maniac because I got very similar vibes. So I'm glad you felt the same thing. It also reminded me a little bit of Mike Schur's The Good Place, which is a wonderful comedy. And of course, Mike Schur and Amy Poehler worked on Parks and Rec together. So it kind of seems like they, you know, they're having similar ideas and they're executing it in different ways, which I think is pretty cool. So yeah, and the last thing I just want to say is that Damien said that he's not surprised because everything is getting sequel seasons and like no shows do. Mm-hmm. That's kind of true, right? A lot of things that are supposed to be one and done end up getting renewed for something. So far, the only one that I can really think of is Sharp Objects, right? Sharp Objects isn't coming back for a season 2 mm-hmm. right now, so we'll see. But it looks like they have a game plan going into it, man. So I've watched 6 episodes. I really love it so far. I can't wait to watch the back 2. And we'll talk about it, I guess, deep dive next week.
Yeah, for sure. But for everyone who has seen it, please let me know on the comments down below. Did you love it? Did you hate it? How do you feel about time being so relative? And do you think there's a way or a deep message that Russian Doll is trying to tell the audience viewer to understand and grasp. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please, please, please go watch it. I think it's definitely one of the best things Netflix has to offer in 2019. All right, Christian, let's go ahead and see what the fans have to say here. You were saying you brought up the whole Damien thing. What else? We got Jet Jackson saying, is this the female version of Groundhog Day? Yeah, pretty much, more or less. Would you agree, Christian?
Yeah, but much more, man. I don't want to, like, that almost is reductionist, you know what I mean? And I think also, like, Netflix set themselves up for it because, yeah, it's a Groundhog's Day type show, but they release it the day before Groundhog's Day. Yeah, like, it's going to be a whole thing. So I don't want people to think that that's a bad thing. Groundhog's Day is a classic. All right, so go watch it. It's really good, I promise.
All right, so the next thing I got right here is some horror shit that, you know, I don't like to fuck with, but this is really, really good. So let's go ahead and play this trailer from HBO's Folklore, and we'll be right back.
Punya rumah pasti juga gak keberatan. Pasti sih gak keberatan.
Sini bos. Cepat ya, buka aja. Buka.
Ruhnya tak tenang. Kali ini mesti boleh buat.
Holy.
Sabai, anakku. Tak lama lagi semuanya akan selesai.
Right, that is Folklore. It is already out now on February 1st on HBO, but it did say HBO Asia. So, Christian, I'll let you go ahead and kind of deep dive into this first before I give you my thoughts. So what do you think of Folklore?
Right. Okay, cool. HBO Asia, you should still be able to access it on regular-ass HBO. So go cool. Watch it. But what I liked about it, one, I think we were pretty big fans of Kingdom, right? So I wanted to kind of spotlight some more international stuff. HBO has branches all over the world, and, you know, Asia is one of them. And this seemed like a really interesting project because what they wanted to do was to tap into cultural folklores, right? Like, you know, we're Spanish, man. We have El Cucuy's, right? We have, like, these fucking ghost things. Like, that's our creepy boogeyman story.
Yeah,
and every
Chupacabra.
Culture has one. Yeah, we got those too, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I like the idea of one, getting more intimate with different cultures, because that's the great thing about Netflix and HBO and all these other places. They have this global reach, but it genuinely looks pretty creepy, man. Like, and that's what I said, every single culture has a boogeyman story. So I really like that we're going to see a bunch of stuff that's, you know, reminiscent of what we already know, but it's also going to be steeped in, deeply into the culture of these people. So when I first saw this, I thought it was going to be a really interesting kind of thing. And the more I looked at it, it just got more and more intriguing to me. So yeah, man, I mean, I'm digging it. What are you thinking? I know you hate horror, let alone foreign horror.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. You brought up something I didn't even think about, is that you're right. It seems like each culture has its own, you know, horror story, right? Folklore. On just things that they grew up with and know. You know, I don't know a lot of Asian folklore when it comes to the horror stuff that they know. But I definitely know the story of the Chupacabra, right? So seeing something like this actually kind of gets me excited, because I don't deal with horror, but when I see something like this, what the fuck is that? I don't want to fucking even see it. But I'm also fascinated. Like, what is this, dude? Explain this to me. That shit ain't no fucking folklore. That's someone possessed. This is some real fucking demonic shit right here, dude. And good job on the fucking artwork, because, or on the makeup job, because this looks creepy as shit. Yeah, man.
I think it speaks to the production values too, man. Like, yo, these people are not, it's not like the olden days where everyone other than America really got shafted in production values and you needed like really genius directors to squeeze, you know, millions out of nothing in order to make something good. Like, now the money's being spent in these cultures and they're starting to put out really, really intriguing art. Yeah, look at that thing. Fuck. Nah, man. Terrifying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I'm really excited, man. And I want to spotlight it because, yeah, we get to talk about all the popular shit here too, but this looks really, really interesting to me. And most of us can access it. So why wouldn't we?
And one more thing that Christian forgot to mention is that these are just 6-episode, hour-long shows. So it's going to be an easy binge. I'm not sure if all of them has come out or they'll come out weekly, but it's 6 episodes, probably an hour piece. So go ahead and check it out. That is Folklore. Let's see what some of these toasties have to say. And let me go ahead and find you guys. And we got here, let me scroll down. Damien says, looks like someone's uncle. So, maybe, I don't know whose uncle that is.
Whose fucking uncle are you hanging out with, Damien? I would never hang out with that fucking uncle. What are you talking about, Damien? Fuck. Scary.
All right. So let's go ahead and now jump into the next story I got here. Christian, Sci-Fi is now going to produce a Chucky TV show. And I got here Child's Play. Is that a Chucky thing that I just don't know of?
Yeah, man. Child's Play is the original Chucky, man. See, God damn it. What would you do without me? All right, let me take over quickly.
Go ahead.
So Chucky, an impassioned plea. You can think Chucky on the surface really sucks, but compared to other franchises, right? Halloween, Friday the 13th, fucking Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street, all that shit, right? Those all eventually had different creative directors come in and out of the roles, right? Mm-hmm. Chucky has always been the same guy over and over. It's like this guy named Don Mancini who's written and directed every single one of those movies, with the exception of this new movie that's about to come out. The studios bought the rights and they're rebooting it without his permission or consent, right? Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is that he is coming back to do the Sci-Fi series, and he's got the original Chucky, the guy who does the voice too, Brad Dourif. Mm-hmm. And they're working with the Channel Zero guy, Nick Antosca. And you know I love me some Channel Zero. You know that guy really fucking understands horror in a really, really cerebral way. And so I actually am kind of on hype about this. I think this is going to be a really good marriage of Nick Antosca's like sensibilities as a horror director and the sarcasm and funny kind of campy nature of Chucky. So you haven't watched any of these movies then, have you?
No, I've seen them. This is one of those things just like... what's that movie? American Werewolf in London or whatever the fuck. Listen, man, this is one of those things that I saw as a kid. I just never got. Although I do remember that one of my uncles just had like an actual like Chucky like doll and stuff. Right. And that always freaked me the fuck out. But when I see this, do I get excited? No, horror is not my genre. It's not my go-to. I mean, I know I joke a lot about me getting scared half the time I am. But Chucky was always one of those people that I never really got the popularity of, but I do have a quote here from the show creator that says, the show will be a fresh take on the franchise, allowing us to explore Chucky's character with a depth that is uniquely afforded by the television series format while staying true to the original vision that has terrorized audiences for over 3 decades. And then, of course, a lot of people were saying, or what I looked up here, Christian, is that Sci-Fi is going to allow Chucky to say the F-bomb, and that is fuck. I don't know why that's a big deal. I really don't care, but tell me what I'm missing out here. It just the fuck, just a thing with Chucky? Is that like his...
Well, I mean, I think the larger thing is like Sci-Fi isn't necessarily like an HBO or a Showtime, right? Like they're more of an FX. And FX, you'll get like one F word per season or something. But this isn't new even for Sci-Fi. I think the larger takeaway here is that Sci-Fi, a channel that has been relegated to like being a joke of TV for forever. In the last couple of years, they gave you like 12 Monkeys, which was really great. The Expanse, which is now on Amazon. Channel Zero, which I really, really loved. And now they're kind of going into business here and they're not giving a fuck about having to not say the F word, as it were. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So I just think it's just showing that they're going out trying to get properties and give creators like creative freedom and stuff like that, which I think is a really good sign for them. So again, they might still be jokes for now, but they're making moves, man. They have a couple series that are genuinely great.
Yeah, and they're definitely one of the bigger contenders, I think, that's kind of stepping up their game, unlike Amazon. So we'll see how that show does in 2019. All right.
Yeah, hold on. See, Van over here is talking about Brad Dourif. He's back. I promise, Brad. Or Van. Brad Dourif is coming back. All right. Sorry, Jordan Peele, mate. Let's go.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and talk about this fucking brilliant man. Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone will now premiere, Christian, on CBS All Access. The first two episodes will premiere on the streaming service on April Fool's Day, followed by weekly episodes on Thursday, April 11th. It says here, Jordan Peele will also act as the show's host and narrator. That has always been a hand-in-hand thing with the Twilight Zone series. Now that we have a date, how excited are you, Christian, for Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone?
My birthday month is getting sweeter and sweeter, man. I got Game of Thrones, and now I got the Twilight Zone. We've talked about this at length, man. My love for the Twilight Zone is one of my great loves of TV. We've talked about Eye of the Beholder specifically. It's also one of your favorite episodes.
Absolutely. And
so it's like, look, I can't tell you how excited I am for the Twilight Zone to be back in a relevant way. They brought it back in the early 2000s, but the creative team really wasn't up to snuff. It seems like Jordan Peele has such a love and reverence for this. And in fact, his new movie, what is it, Us, that comes out in March, is influenced very much by a Twilight Zone episode. So I think it's awesome. I think it's relevant. I think we live in this weird, bizarro world, you know, that Trump's president. So I think we need this show. It's ripe. It's time for the Twilight Zone to come back.
Yeah, I agree. Seeing Jordan Peele act as the host and narrator also gets me really excited. Breaking, what would that be? Is that like breaking the fifth dimension? Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't fucking know. But anyway, that's gonna be really cool to kind of see him play that role, because I always thought the host and narrator was always the extra thing that made Twilight Zone more fascinating. I mean, listen, right. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But I always love, out of nowhere, this narrator comes at the end of the episode and be like, what the fuck? Okay.
Right. Like, right. Yo, Rod Serling has like walked out of so many bathroom stalls in the middle of a serious scene. Just to be like, what's up? I'm Rod Serling. Here's a fucking message for you. Like, it's amazing. I kind of can't wait how they're going to do it. I hope he just like a fucking smoke bomb like Batman, and then Jordan Peele's there narrating.
Yeah. So this gets me super excited. Again, I'm kind of curious to see what Jordan Peele's take is on, you know, the current stories he can tell us. It's crazy. I mean, Black Mirror is this modern day's version of Twilight Zone. So before we switch topics, how do you think Jordan Peele can separate itself from Black Mirror? Because I felt like that is the perfect Twilight Zone everyone should be watching right now because of its messaging and where we are as a society with technology. So where do you think Jordan Peele's approach can go with the Twilight Zone? Would it be more Beauty's the Eye of the Beholder type thing, or you think he might do more horror stuff with this show?
Well, sure. Even that episode, it's one that I really love. Like, yeah, the name of the episode is kind of like what it's about. But beyond that, it's about the different races, right? Like, it's always been a social commentary. And I think that that's kind of what, you know, Black Mirror, as great as it is, it's saying one thing over and over again. Technology bad, or sometimes good if you're San Junipero. But like, other than that, it's kind of on message. It doesn't use its premise to dissect any like social commentary the way like even Star Trek did, right? Like, they're famous for doing that. First interracial kiss on television ever was on Star Trek. But Rod Serling's also not immune to that. And a lot of Twilight Zone early on was talking about really, really important cultural issues. So I think that how you separate is you can give it a sci-fi twist, but you know, you try to explore contemporary issues that we're having as a society. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to do it.
Cool. So let's go ahead and see what Damien has to say, because Damien's all over that chat today. He says, super excited. Hope we can get as crazy as the original one. Those twists were ahead of their time. I definitely agree. I hope for a Night Gallery remake as well. Christian, please inform me here. What was that story about?
Which one? Night Gallery?
Night Gallery, yeah.
I don't remember which one that is. Is that the one where the guy can't talk? He made the bet? I don't know. Damien, fill me in. I've seen like all of these, I promise you. But like the ones I remember is because I saw Eye of the Beholder as like a 3-year-old and it scared the shit out of me.
Same
then
here.
I saw it again as a 16-year-old, still scared the shit out of me. So obviously that one stuck with me a little bit more. But yeah, we'll give all the Twilight Zone knowledge before the premiere, because now that I have a premiere date, I'm binging this fucking thing, man. I cannot wait to watch these old episodes to get into the spirit of it.
And it is also going to be on the CBS streaming network. So let's see where CBS comes swinging with this stuff come April. So now let's go ahead and talk about another thing, keeping up with the horror stuff. We have here with CBS also coming out with a 10-episode series based on Stephen King's The Stand. Christian, I know who Stephen King is, but I don't know any of his stories besides The Shining. And of course, now with It that recently came out. So what the hell is The Stand all about? And should I be excited for this?
Yeah. The short answer is yeah. Look, they did a miniseries of this in the early 90s. It wasn't particularly great because as good as Gary Sinise is, Lieutenant Dan included, it just didn't have the kind of grit that you need. It needs to be way darker than they made it, right? This is Stephen King's a post-apocalyptic world, right? A virus comes and it wipes out most of humanity. And all of humanity kind of depends on like a couple bands of survivors and a 106-year-old woman. Gets really intense. Now, this is where it gets interesting, though. This is one of my favorite Stephen King books ever. And the reason being is that they have an antagonist in this book that is the scariest antagonist I've ever seen. His name is Randall Flagg, right? Now, remember a long time ago when we were talking about the Stephen King show Castle Rock, I was trying to drop some knowledge on you about the fact that The Dark Tower is this fantasy series that Stephen King has, but it's a linchpin to every other book he's ever written. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So basically, the whole premise of Dark Tower is that there's the gunslinger and he's chasing a bad guy who's just called the Man in Black. He's pure evil incarnate, okay? Randall Flagg is the real world incarnation of the Man in Black, right? Like, this is between the two universes and shit. And so, like, yeah, he's fucking horrific. He's scary. I cannot wait, especially if they do this correctly, and I think they're going to. Because the problem is you can't do this as a two-hour movie, but with 10 episodes, with 10 full solid hours where you don't have to worry about with the FCC, right, censoring anything. Mm-hmm. Dude, this is, like, the project that I've wanted for so long. And it's great that things like It came out and kind of gave Stephen King another bit of relevancy, right? Because, like, you knew who he was before this recent upswing, but definitely sure. Seems like he's having a moment, right?
He certainly is right now. I know, doesn't the second It come out this year too, or is that 2020? I believe it's this year.
No, it's this year. Yeah, it's coming out.
So with all that being said, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Again, this is another CBS show that's coming out on their streaming platform. So go ahead and look forward to that.
Streaming wars, man. I'm telling you, like, they're ramping up. CBS is trying to make moves too, because that's where we're heading. We're heading towards, like, you thought you cut the cord and you were free of paying big bills, but now you're going to be spending like $180 to get every single thing from all these different streaming networks. And CBS just announced two projects that are pretty fucking unmissable, you know what I'm saying? So I can't wait to see both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So now let's go ahead and dive into part two of our meat and potatoes here for What's in the Box. And that is Ted Bundy. There's a 4-episode docuseries that came out on Netflix last week. So let me go ahead and play the trailer, and then I'll be right back with our thoughts on the document series.
He didn't look like anybody's notion of somebody who would tear apart young girls.
My name is Ted Bundy.
I've never spoken to anybody about this. But I am looking for an opportunity to tell the story as best I can.
A person of this type chooses his victim for a reason. Possession, control, violence.
There was something unique about Ted's brain. He talked in terms of a voice in his head, and this voice would start saying things about women.
He had very blue eyes. When he really got going, his eyes went absolutely black.
Murder leaving a person of this type hungry, unfulfilled, would also leave him with the obviously irrational belief that that the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. And the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. Or the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled.
Theodore Bundy has escaped, suspected of dozens of sex killings in Washington State, Idaho, Utah, and Colorado.
I think things are going to work out. That's about all I can say.
Bundy is acting as his own lawyer.
What is unusual to see is that many of the onlookers are women.
Are you a little scared when you look at him?
He just doesn't look like the type to kill somebody.
Serial killer Theodore Bundy has escaped once again.
One of the FBI's most wanted men.
He was charming, good-looking, smart. Are you sure you have the right guy?
I'm not an animal, I'm not crazy, I'm on this
personality. I mean, I'm just a normal individual.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was A Conversation with the Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes. After watching this, this is one of those things that when I watched, I mean, everyone knew who a man like this was, right? Not for the right reasons, just like, you know, it's creepy thinking about it. So unlike Fyre Festival, where I get excited to see the tragedy of a music festival go down in flames, I'm here now watching the inner workings of a psyche of this serial killer, where that term was never even created before up until a man like him surfaced, Christian. And before I pass it to you, this was great. This was informative as a documentary. It did what it pretty much presented, but it didn't give me the answer of why an individual would commit so much murder. So when I pass it to you, Christian, is that one of the things you left with wondering why they didn't really explore the psyche of the serial killer himself? Or were you fascinated more with the fact that this documentary was just kind of, well, he's handsome and he's a charming guy and he just deceived people?
I honestly, man, so much of this documentary really kind of freaked me out for unintended consequences, right? There's a bunch of things that happened that were just really strange to me. And of course, that's one of them, right? I didn't come into it expecting to have all the answers, you know what I mean? I didn't think that that was what we were going to get from it. I think what the big takeaway is that this guy was an egotist. And oftentimes when you are this creepy fucking serial killer, you have to think that you're better than people, right? You just have to, because you're taking people's lives and stuff like that. So I didn't come into it expecting that. I thought it was a really interesting part in the documentary where he is incapable of talking about himself, right? So that to trick him into talking about himself in the third person, like, well, look, you're a smart guy, right? Like, appealing to his fucking ego, because that's the way that you talk to these people. And at that point, he's able to open up and give like crazy amounts of detail, but while never saying that he's responsible, right? Like the individual, the gentleman, the perpetrator, like never fucking says it. So, I mean, that in and of itself is a big look into his psyche, you know, because there is like that little Mindhunter crossover for a split second. You see that guy, right, Bill? They showed him in the documentary. It's one of the guys who was in that behavioral science unit. Mm-hmm. So that's literally one of the people who went on to do the Mindhunter book in the show. But I have a bunch more I want to say about this. But did you want to tackle the psyche first, or how do you want to go about this? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about the documentary as kind of the format of it all. Right. There's something. It just like I'm getting all this information about Ted Bundy and his like childhood and, you know, kind of where he went. Right. Like graduating, getting a degree in psychology, maybe, you know, dealing with stuff with his political work. You know, and just kind of being an active individual. And of course, even when those moments where they just give those bullet points of like, this was his life and he had a great family, you know, but there's always something a little off. And of course, there's just that, you know, like ominous, like dun 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 dun, boom, right? But not in the cool Inception way, just the like freaky way, where they're just giving simple bullet points about his life. And I'm just watching this shit like, you know, I'm more scared than usual because of this fucking goddamn score, dude. I can't deal with this score. So I wanted to say kudos to the score because it was unnecessarily disturbing for no reason, even when they were talking about. So Ted Bundy one day went to a festival and there were just lots of kids having fun. Dun, 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 dun. And I'm like, okay, we fucking get it. Chill. Thank you. Chill. So I just wanted to quickly say that. But you know, jokes aside, just knowing who Ted Bundy was as an individual, right? He was a narcissist, and he was really smart, dude. He knew how to you know, win people over. And, you know, he wasn't, I think they said in the documentary that like he wasn't necessarily crazy about politics, but just knowing the game of how politics works is what kind of got him into it. So I thought that was kind of really fascinating. And now if we can talk about the psyche of it, you know, there was always a lingering question for me, you know, to know, like, why would a man like him you know, do all these murders. But then, of course, you quickly find out, like, in a throwaway line, it's like, well, he got abused by, like, his grandfather or some shit like that, right? And that's pretty much it. And then we don't really explore that. But what was more fascinating is, how the fuck does this man go to jail twice? The second time he escapes jail, he's pretty much missing for 45 days. And then I'm actually more intrigued by, like, just kind of the task police force in the 70s/80s of, like, right. Man, was it
the bigger
really?
Question yeah. here is how fucking bad were cops in the fucking 70s and 80s? Like, that's the only question that needs to be asked here, because dude just jumps out of a courthouse one day and, like, runs, gets out, and he's caught like a week later, no big deal. But then he just, like, climbs out of a fucking cell. Like, there's just a hole in his cell, and he climbs out, and then he's gone for 45 days and proceeds to kill, like, 9 more people, right? So, like, how shitty are the cops, man?
Dude,
like,
the cops are fucking shitty. So, I mean, listen. And I love how in the second time they're like, well, Ted Bundy weighed about 145, and he climbed out of a ceiling. And he proceeded.
Well, they cut to that one guy who's just, like, incredulous. He's smiling and laughing about it. He's like, well, I guess so. Like, people aren't going to fucking die because you didn't keep tracks of this motherfucker. Like, Jesus. I don't know, dude. It was astounding. It was astounding. But the whole point of that documentary is, and listen, this is when I want to talk to Adrian and Miriam. I'm sorry that I got to make you ambassadors for your entire gender, but I need... Let's have a talk for a second, all right? What's up with women liking this guy? Because I think that the whole point of the documentary is a lot about, well, he was an unassuming, seemingly intelligent and charismatic white man, so no way he could have done anything. That's, like, why I think it took so long for him to get really in trouble or to get caught. I mean, fuck, dude, when the judge gave him the death penalty, mm-hmm. he was like, I have no animosity towards you. I think you're a bright guy. You just killed some women. But if you didn't kill women, I would have loved to have had a beer with you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
so
I remember that.
How does this relate to women, man? Because, like, you saw a little bit in the documentary, some women being fascinated with him. He got married while he was on death row.
Dude, he had a fucking kid, dude. Like, right. I'm kind of curious to know.
Where is she? I'm sorry, man. Like, but this little kid, I'm scared. Like, is she under constant surveillance? I know that's fucked up to say, but her father is, like, one of the most notorious serial killers ever. You know what I'm saying? And ended up in our backyard, man. I think that's what's so crazy about it is I didn't know Ted Bundy ended up in Florida and killed at FSU, which was, like, what, 4 hours away from where we live.
Yes, of
so
course.
So fucking yep. fascinating, man. Right. All right. So I'm talking over you. Go ahead.
No. I mean, there's lots of things to break down, and let's go ahead and talk about him being a charmer. Let me play this quick clip from the trailer here.
Bundy is acting as his own lawyer.
What is unusual to see is that many of the onlookers are women.
Are you a little scared when you look?
Okay. That's a look that she wants to fuck. Okay. Let's be real. I don't know what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, because, you know, we don't discriminate here on what's in the box. Let's do a simple test here. Attractive. Attractive. Pretty good looking. Attractive. Oh, fuck. He's attractive, Christian. I don't know what to tell you. yeah, man. Listen, it's... Sure, he's a charmer. But you know, jokes aside, let's talk about this for a second. Because... they didn't bring it up, and I don't even know if I want to bring it up, but I'm going to still say it anyway, cautiously. Was a lot of it like, oh, he's a charmer, or he couldn't commit these crimes because, well, he's a white male in the 70s with a degree in psychology, and of course, racial profiling, he doesn't fit the bill of what a criminal was back in those days. Would you argue that?
No, I mean, I think the whole thing, I mean, I don't want to get too far into the racism aspect, but of course, like, that's the underlying fucking, you know, theme throughout all of this. But I think it really is just that he was this really charismatic guy who could go into a room and charm the pants off of you, right? They talked about that when he was doing his political career. He would just go in and be amongst people that he felt were on his intellectual level. And so it's just, dude, I don't know, man. The whole thing about it is just like, hey, man, you can be a confident person, and if you're confident enough, like, people are just going to not assume you could do this. I think that's the point. I think that's kind of what one of the final lines of the film is, right? The docuseries is just like, yo, they're everywhere. They're, like, all around us, and it's easier. You want to be able to point at something that happened in my past as, like, a definitive reason as to why I am the way I am. The truth is, like, yo, we're all, like, we're here. We're just hiding in plain sight. You know what I'm saying? So... Yeah. I don't know. It's really fucking disheartening. And I feel like the whole point of it, and this is why I'm asking the women thing, but I think from a legal perspective, it was just that he was a really intelligent, remember when Bush won the presidency and they all said that it was because you could have a beer with him? I think that you could get a beer with Ted Bundy, man. I think that's like that's the thing. Everyone liked him who met him, and they liked him so much that they thought there's no way he's capable of it. And so fucking 30 some odd women died, man. It's horrific. It really is. Not to mention a 12-year-old in our home state, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, which, listen, obviously, I don't want to say this. It's going to sound bad because the 35 other women who were killed, but when you get to a 12-year-old kid, they really fucked with me in a way I was not ready for. You know what I mean? And if I can I make 2 points of being a little shitty about this documentary?
Yeah, go ahead.
Quickly, it's just that one, I think that they did the classic documentary mistake of focusing on the person who killed people rather than the victims who were killed. I get that there are so many victims that it'd be a way longer series. I understand that people want to hear the sexier story, which is who Ted Bundy was and why he did it. But we didn't get that answer, right? Like, we never got that answer at the end of it anyway. So it felt like all these people, like, they were just props to tell the story, and they were killed, and they didn't get any of their own screen time or due diligence, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost disrespectful, because it's not like there's a show called I Survived that's really good, where it's, like, women telling stories of how they were, like, almost killed or fucking raped and almost killed. But they're there. Like, at the end of it, they're going to show you a fucking scar that they have. It's them telling a story and being empowered by surviving. These ladies don't get that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Does that make me like too white knightish, or do I make sense to you?
No, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I never thought about it that way. I'm thinking if they did something like that, I mean, that almost could have been an entirely like own episode within the docuseries, right?
Right.
It definitely would have been like one of those things when you watch any TV show where it's like they kind of stop the momentum where they're going just to explain this one point. So they probably could have added something like that. But I felt like I got the gist and the emotional strings, you know, pulled at me when you hear about it. It's kind of disturbing. It's kind of sickening. And you're right. We didn't even mention that this man was like, he practiced necrophilia. You know, that is
really... they spring that on you in the last 20 minutes. Like, by the way, in case you weren't disgusted, necrophilia, right? Like, it's the fucking, it was shocking as hell, man. And quickly, just to follow up my last point, and then I'll talk about one other thing I didn't really love about it. It's just to say a shout out recommendation to another docuseries on Netflix called The Keepers, because that starts off and it starts off as like, oh, it's a murder victim and blah, 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 blah. But what it really becomes about is this like widespread sexual abuse within the Catholic Church to like young ladies. Right. And instead of fetishizing the guy who did it, like the story is told through these women now who are 50, 60 years old, who are like still broken human beings. That's very powerful. I kind of wish they would have done that. Obviously you can't. They did have the one survivor. I just wish they would have had more inclusion of the families, at least of the victims. The other thing that, and I just want to ask people from a sociological point of view, and you yourself, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
They show a lot of celebrating of this guy being killed, right? Like that the government can come and kill you, capital punishment kind of shit.
Yeah.
I'm obviously a pretty liberal guy. I don't want to be too hippie-ish about it. I understand like the impulse of this guy's a monster and he needs to be killed. That's one thing. But the relishing in the death of anyone, let alone a monster, to prove that killing is wrong is a little weird to me. And leave it to Florida to have fucking t-shirt sales and barbecue fucking things and bumper stickers to capitalize on this guy being killed. It really rubbed me the wrong way. So I just wanted to know how you felt about that.
Man. So you took the punchline from me, because that was something I actually wanted to ask all the YouTubers down below. So listen, this is going to be really interesting. Please don't hate me, because you know this is one of those philosophical questions that I know I can't really answer fully, right? And there was someone within the document, you know, the documentary that was saying like, listen, I just believe that like we shouldn't have a say on like who gets to live and who gets to die with the electric chair and all that stuff. And this person was defending Ted Bundy, but how do you defend someone who's killed 35 people, practiced necrophilia, and pretty much ruined these women's lives that could have been something really great, or they could have done something with themselves, you know? So to answer your question, I don't know. And to defend Florida just a little bit, for as crazy as that state is, it wasn't the state of Florida. It was the one or two hillbillies that are like, yep, I just got some white t-shirts that said Bundy Fire and something else. And then
bro,
you see the one clip.
Like a group of 100 people singing na 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 na, hey, 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 goodbye to the walls of a prison. Like, this was a real morbid community that was talking shit. It wasn't one or two people. And I think that's what's creepier to me, man. It was just like a lot of mob mentality. And again, look, I'm not defending this guy. He's a piece of shit. He murdered women, okay? Like, I think it's incredible that women are like, oh, he's a snack, considering he's a fucking serial killer. But I'm just talking about the idea, the impulse to celebrate death. There's a scene where the prosecutor, right? Says something to that effect, right?
Wait, go ahead and say that one more time. Sorry. You were saying there was a scene where the prosecutor.
Right. Yeah. Shut up. I got it. All right. So the prosecutor who he even says, like, we executed him and then they announced that he was dead. And I'm ashamed to say that I was so delighted in knowing that someone was dead. And I hope I never feel that way again. And that's how I felt. The problem is that motherfucker still supported the death penalty after that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm not saying that we need to defend these people. They don't need to be defended. All right. But I just think the idea of killing someone to say, hey, killing is wrong, is a really weird mixed message, even if this guy is clearly a fucking monster. And I mean that, a monster. Like, there's no other words to describe this person. But it's just a really weird, complicated thing, and I kind of wanted to get your take on it.
So if I can sidetrack that question for just a moment, there's something within the documentary where when they sentence him to death, and you're like, okay, you will get the electric chair and all that stuff. My question to you is, before I answer the question throughout me, is that when they declared him that he was going to get the death penalty, why did it take an additional 6 years from when he was going to get the death penalty to actually die? Like, what's happening in between? Because you get that one point now where, like, that one woman who used to be like his college friend, you know, they ended up hooking up in the prison, then they had a kid together. I'm kind of curious to see where those two are right now. But more importantly, you know, why was there so much lapse in from the you are gonna die, but now let's wait an extra 6 years, right?
The justice system, dude. I mean, it's fucked. Like, that happens all the time. In the documentary, they said you could die next week, you could die 2 weeks from now, or you could die never. Like, that's the thing. People spend years and years and years on death row. That's just the thing that happens, man. So I don't have any, like, clear answer for you. One thing that they showed in the documentary, though, is that they were trying to have him claimed incompetent, right, for his initial trial. So they did a bunch of, medical tests to try to see if he was diagnosable for anything. And one lady actually did diagnose him as like a manic depressive bipolar disorder. So he had a lot of shit going on with him, but it didn't make a difference, right? They ended up still executing him when they did. So I don't know, man. I don't know why it takes that long. I mean, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're right. I guess back in the day, because I don't know what it is in 2019. I guess it was just kind of a little messed up. Again, even the term serial killer wasn't a thing. So there's a lot of things people learned from something so horrific. But again, and I'm kind of curious to see what the people are going to say down below. What do you feel about the death penalty? Is that something we should have, something we shouldn't have? You think someone like Ted Bundy, he killed 36 people. I will say this, without a doubt to me, it's like, yeah, he should have died. That piece of shit should have died a long time ago. There should not have been a fucking lapse on someone who did something so horrific, who escaped prison twice and killed more people the second time, for you guys to fucking teeter around on whether or not he's good.
Like, cops fucked that up, Miles. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Let's put blame where blame is due. I know that he did the killing, but, you know, they had him in custody twice and they let him go twice. Like, it's fucking crazy to me, man. That's like such a misstep of justice. And I wonder how many people would have actually been saved if they would have done their job. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if there's anything else I'm missing on Christian, please, everyone, go ahead and watch it. I don't think it does anything new or groundbreaking in terms of it being a documentary that kind of grabs you. But it is something fascinating if you just kind of want to know how someone like this murderer just kind of swayed the people as much as he did. And I thought they did that pretty well, despite the fact we didn't know necessarily the reasons why someone like him would commit so much murders. So that was our discussions on the documentary series. And Christian, was there any last second thoughts you wanted to mention before I switch on over to the next topic?
Nah, just noticed that no women in our chat decided to defend this action, because you can't. This guy's a creepy fuck, and I think most women get that. So
All right, guys. So that was our conversations on Ted Bundy. And now let's go ahead and talk about the next thing. Where are we on time? Christian, let's just go ahead and talk about this one last thing with Barry, season two. And then we'll be right back with our thoughts on the trailer.
This is a story of the first time I ever felt a sense of purpose. This is a story of the first time I took a life.
No.
What I do is not who I am.
There is inherent darkness in you.
Am I evil? Like an evil person?
Yes, you are like the most evil, badass person I know.
Do I not tell you that enough?
All right, so Barry is coming out this spring on HBO. This is a show that, myself included, I've never really heard of until you talked about it, Christian, but everyone who loves Barry loves Barry. So this coming out in the spring, does this excite you right before Game of Thrones in April?
Right, again, so it's going to probably be April, so my birthday month is shaping up to be amazing. Yeah, dude, I really love season one. I think season one was like such a amazing gem that was kind of under the radar and a lot of people didn't hear about it. But listen, it won a bunch of Emmys, like Bill Hader won, Henry Winkler won. I've shown a couple of scenes on the show, but I think you really need to commit to watching it before season two comes out, you know? Also that guy, the bald guy, that guy's name's Noho Hank. I'm not even kidding. No exaggeration. Probably my favorite new character on TV, like just so funny. Every single scene he's in is amazing. And he's one of the reasons that show can kind of walk that tightrope of being really dark, really serious, and then also being ridiculously funny, you know? So I really love it, man. You should check it out.
Cool. No, I'll definitely get on it. Are they hour episodes or are they like 30-minute episodes?
No, they're 30 minutes. They're really easy, man. I think there's only eight in the first season. And it's also directed exclusively by Bill Hader and, God, I'm blanking on his name. Hero Murai, the guy who does Atlanta, and he did the This Is America video.
Oh, yeah.
So really great director, really great direction throughout the whole thing and just whip smart writing. So, yeah, I cannot recommend it enough. And now you have some time. You got a couple months, man. You got to catch up.
Yeah, no, definitely. Will do. So now let's go ahead and jump into the email portion, and then we'll wrap things up here. And look at that, Christian. We got quite the emails. And let's go ahead and start here with Fernando Moreno saying, addressing Goku's origin in DBS Broly. Okay.
Loaded question.
Yeah. Okay, so let me go ahead and read this real quickly. It says, hey, superstar DJ, here we go. This is Fernando from Barcelona, a.k.a. the famous hand behind the Kung Fu TJ or TJT. So I finally got to see DBS Broly movie yesterday, for it hadn't been released yet in Spain, and I fucking loved it. It was it has humor, hands down, the best action nobody has ever seen on any Dragon Ball installment, and also really touching moments, man. I got glassy eye a couple times. So when you discussed the movie with Corey, you said you didn't like or at least had something to say about it, the reshaping of Goku's origin and how it got too Superman-y. Could that be caused by the translation? I saw the movie in Catalan. For me, Goku only speaks Japanese or Catalan and not necessarily in that order. And the way it was put, it was something like he would have been sent somewhere else. Anyway, Planet Vegeta is doomed, so let's send him to Earth, which is pretty easy, and we'll have no problems for surviving there. No be there Superman shit whatsoever, which is what I got from your discussion with Corey. Japanese translations are tricky, whether it's sub or dub, and it has happened before, at least in Spain, where English and Catalan translations change story points, mess with the names. Did I get it wrong from your conversation? Would you be okay with the Catalan approach? Have I been saying that right the whole time, Christian?
You've been nailing it, man.
Okay. How wrong is pushing 40s and trying to discuss this stuff? Take care, guys, and thanks for the show. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, you're right. I think a lot of it with the translations could be different. If they changed it differently, whether it's subs or dubs, then, you know, I'm glad you get that interpretation of it. But for me, and I think for a lot of fandom of Dragon Ball Z, I mean, Christian, you know, I don't know how much you know about this, but the whole conversation of Goku versus Superman has been one of those stupid fucking things that goes on and on. And although Goku wins, there's so much that I felt like the creator at this point is like, I think it's going to be an inside joke to just say, let's give him the Superman story. And, you know, despite the translation, I think there's moments within the movie where it's pretty much of like, hey, yeah, we're going to send you to Earth, but it was also very Superman-like too, where, listen, Planet Vegeta was about to be blown up. And then, of course, it's like Goku's mother and father running down to like send Goku in a pod. I believe if I had it correct before with the origins of Goku is that, yeah, his father knew that he was sent away, but we never heard anything about his mother. Not saying I've always wanted to know who Goku's mother was, but the way it was set up in the movie, it was definitely more of a Superman vibe for me. Where the planet is destroying and everyone's all kind of freaking out. And then it was one of those, well, there's our one hope in the world, right? And I still got Superman vibes from it. Christian, I know you really don't have a dog in the fight with this, but did you get a Superman vibe out of it as well when you saw it?
In as much that we're telling the same six stories over and over again. You know what I mean? There's a reason why like a bunch of holy books all have the same, like, oh, there's a flood and then this happens. Like, we're telling the same stories over and over again. Eventually you're going to overlap. Now, if you're talking about author intent, that's interesting because you said you think it might be like an inside joke almost, like because there's been this like pop culture feud by the fans for so long.
For sure.
That they might have done it like just to troll people. Is that what you really think?
I don't think they like necessarily did it to troll them, but like a subconscious troll. Does that make sense? Where it's like, listen, if we're going to course correct it and make Broly this very famous Dragon Ball Z character now canon, let's go ahead and change things around. And honestly, I'm not saying I even really fully hated it. I just wanted to know why they even did it, right? Because there's more fan servicey stuff in there that really didn't even have to be shown at all when they showed, you know, Vegeta and Raditz as a kid, right? When they're like, hey, Prince Vegeta, you know, just to let you know from our scanners, we found out our whole planet and our race got, you know, decimated. How do you feel about it, sir? Right? Give me some adventures of Vegeta and Raditz as a, you know, destroying right. Some planets and shit. That would have been okay. I don't see the reason. And now we all know that, I guess, Broly and Vegeta are the same ages and Goku's 5 years younger. I don't know why that was thrown in there too, you know? So, but yeah, that was pretty much my thing on it. To answer your question fully though, I don't think they did it purposely, but I don't think they were dumb about it when they did do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they weren't oblivious to it either.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Right. So let's go ahead and see if I can answer one of Ryan Walterson's emails this time. So let's go ahead and look at this. Hey guys, for once, here's an anime-related email and a very serious one. Miles, have you heard about the allegations regarding Vic? And what are your thoughts on it? Sorry if this is a more serious post. Also, before you read the above post, oh, too late. Here's his response to all of it. This might be enough to make a segment to post on YouTube.
Wait. I need everything to stop. Who is the subject of this? What happened? What did I miss?
Yeah, I have no idea, dude. The allegations regarding Vic Mignogna. Let me just quickly open this up real quickly.
Open it up. Maybe I do know this, but I don't know what I'm talking about.
Far from perfect, fans recount unwanted affection from voice actor Vic Mignogna.
I did hear about this. Okay. Yeah.
So do you want to give me some context here, Christian? Because I don't know what he's talking about.
I mean, not much, right? It's just like some Me Too shit. The guy was a little handsy and creepy, right? I mean, the article's there. I would be remiss if I tried to talk about something I don't know. Maybe you should just try to talk about it. What does it say there?
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at him guessing to be too handsy, touchy with some fans.
This is indicative of just a larger problem, which is like I go to a lot of cons and stuff, and like now I'm you know, I have a comic and this is going to be a thing that I have to do, but you see it sometimes and it's really disgusting, which is like you have a position of privilege and a position of power over people. People admire your work. People are fans of yours, and like there is some weird, like in the same way that like a Hippocratic oath between like doctors and nurses, you know what I'm saying? Like there is that still weird oath that you shouldn't be fucking with or taking advantage of, or I don't know. It's just really creepy to me, man. And I don't know how much more that needs to be said about it, to be honest. It's just like, hey, don't touch people unless they fucking tell you to. Like, it's not really that hard, you know what I mean? But Well, I don't know. Any thoughts on this? You have a sister, man. See, that's the thing. No, I don't have a little sister. I would freak the fuck out if I did.
I mean, here's the thing. I think there's a point when you reach some sort of a like a celebrity status, so to speak, whether it's being a voice actor or being a voice actor in a video game, you know, role or just anything in general. I think there's a sense of responsibility that you kind of have to uphold and take within yourself, right? Because there's people who adore you and that appreciate your work you do in whatever field you do it in. And I don't know, this is my one set perspective from just being a DJ for 10 years. Why do you have to be a creep when sometimes it just, you know, like it shouldn't be hard for you to get with someone. So you shouldn't be going around and just having that mentality that you have the Midas touch and you can like, you know, woo anyone over, because that's fucking really disgusting and disturbing, you know? So there's my take on that. I don't know why but maybe they just want to kind of see where the gray goes, right?
Okay. Like, hold on. Let me jump in here, because this is much, much worse than I thought. So apparently, like, there's a couple allegations, but it's not just about inappropriate touching.
Gotcha.
Allegedly, he intoxicated a woman, brought her up to his room and raped her, which is fucking horrific.
Oh, God.
And then she was called a con slut. So, you know, I'm sure there are con sluts, by the way. I'm not saying there aren't, but I don't think that being a slut of any variety means that you're saying, hey, rape me. So that's pretty fucking disgusting. I mean, I don't have much to add to this, dude. Like, this kind of stuff really fucking makes me feel gross, because it's like you don't get that kind of access unless people have a trust in you because of your work to begin with. And that's just really disgusting to me.
For sure. And let me ask you, because I don't want to even act like a high horse about it, but recently, you know, I've been telling you in between, you know, when we do these shows and all that and leading up to it, how, you know, we get like fan art. We get like people sliding in our DMs or Facebook messaging about like, hey, right, great show and all this stuff. And I feel better to now know, like, okay, people are respecting what we have to say. So let's just kind of keep that momentum going forward and let's just be the best people possible, right? To kind of give people informative information. And I have no problem being wrong and being told I was wrong, because that's the nature of the beast of what we do. But right, when someone kind of abuses that power to think, well, now charge me $25 at a fucking con to get a picture with DJ Miles. Like, I don't know. I think that's always kind of been like a shitty thing, you know? Like, when I see Lou Ferrigno like charge people $55 to get a picture of him when he was the Hulk. Now, granted, I've never been in that situation where someone has only known me for one thing for 30 fucking years, right? And how you can still cash cow that train. Or milk it for what it's worth. You get what I'm saying. But I don't know.
I'm surprised. But this is your boy. This is the guy who played Broly, man. So I thought you'd be more personally affected by this.
I didn't even know that. I didn't even know this was the voice actor.
That's the Broly guy.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, listen, I don't care. As long as it's not Sean Chemel or Chris Sabat, who voices Piccolo Vegeta / Goku, we're okay. Lord. So not saying I excuse this motherfucker's action. That's disgusting. And it's gross. I mean, I don't know what else to say from it. So, but sorry to get so serious. Let's switch things over.
Is there another email? Fuck.
Yeah. We got two more. We got one from Jet Jackson. It says, so anyways, I have a stupid, maybe fun question for you guys. You going to answer it? Good. Thought so.
Okay.
So the scenario is you have been kidnapped and placed in a room with only a TV. You can only watch one thing for the next 2 years while you are held captive. Another thing, you may only watch a show with only a season worth of episodes, so nothing more than 14 episodes. If the show you're thinking of has more than one season, you can only choose one season of that show. So no One Piece or Naruto or anime. That, because that's never fucking ending. Y'all ain't slick. Thanks anyway, you assholes. You're an asshole too, but I appreciate the email.
Yeah.
Christian, I'll let you go first. What would be the one thing if you were locked in a room with a TV, and I guess we can't pass the 14 episode mark, so no Lost.
Yeah, right. That's what I was saying. Even I think that's unfair, because now the what used to be full seasons of TV were 22 episodes, and that was pretty much standard up until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And then they started doing this 13 episode thing. So I think that's a little bit hard to do. I don't know, man. Let's stick with one season shows just to make this not a fucking thing that I'm going to do for 45 minutes live on air.
Yeah.
Firefly is really good. Obviously, there's a great show FX did called Terriers that I loved. Like, really one of the best one and done shows ever. I'll have more in a second. What do you got? You got anything?
Dude, I mean, listen, I was never even going to say the cop-out anime answers. I think to myself, because a lot of people know how much I love Game of Thrones, where I'm like, yeah, I don't mind watching Game of Thrones for 2 years, but I'm like, would I really want to watch that show for 2 years straight, only one season? Damn, what was some great TV? I wouldn't mind watching Breaking Bad season 4 for 2 years locked up. I think there's a lot of good stuff happening within season 4 of Breaking Bad.
Right. Well, if we're going to do that, that changes it. Because I can pick any number of fucking shows at that point.
Yeah.
Lost season 5 when they go fully fucking sci-fi. Sopranos season 5 because it's incredible. The Wire season 4. Breaking Bad season 4, as you said, is pretty fucking perfect. Deadwood season 2. Like, I can do this all day, man. I think the harder question is like one season shows. You know what I mean? Invasion's another one season show that's really wonderful. Thank you, Dolomo. I don't know, it's a great question. I wish we could have had more time to think about it. Y'all should start sending these questions a week early so we have a whole week to give you better answers, but yeah. Those are my answers.
Let's go into the last email here that says books and Netflix from Marcus Kilgore, good fan and supporter. So thank you, Marcus, for the email. It says, hello, DJ Miles and Christian. Name a favorite book, comic, or graphic novel of yours that in the right hands would make a great series on Netflix. For me, Starship Troopers is one of my favorite books, the sci-fi classic of military adventure, and would make an excellent Netflix series. What's yours? Keep up the great work. Christian, if you don't already know what I'm going to think about or say or adapt, if they had all the money in the world, I want to see Old Man Logan done right. Like, I'm saying page by page of that in Netflix, I would be so fucking excited if they did something like that. What would be your answer?
Comics. I want to kind of get away from superhero comics then. Because there are a couple I really, really loved, and a couple of them that might be TV shows. So I don't know. Amazon bought the rights for a comic called Lazarus, which I'm a big fan of. And it's kind of like it's set in this futuristic world where like families are all billionaires and shit. But one person in the family gets the task of being the Lazarus, which is like they have this serum in their blood that doesn't allow them to die. Right. So they're called the sword of the family. And it's their job to go fuck people up. And even if they die, they come back. That's just what happens in this world. It's really, really interesting. I really loved that one. There's another one called Sheltered that I think I've talked to you about independently, but it's a really great comic. It's only 18 issues. And it's all about, doomsday preppers, these fucking weirdos that I always make fun of. Well, let's live in a world where they're not weirdos and they're right? They've been training their kids since they were little that the volcano under Yellowstone is going to erupt. Right. So they have got them all ready to prep. And at the end of the first issue, all of these kids, ages no more than 15, kill their parents. Every single adult in the compound is murdered because they taught them too well. They taught them so well that they realize these old people are going to drain our resources. I think that'd be fucking amazing just to watch that play out in real time.
I got one. I mean, this is pretty much a cop out answer because I don't even know if there is a graphic novel. I'm assuming there is. But listen, just like a Resident Evil becoming a Netflix thing, dude, wouldn't you love to see a Dead Space series?
There's some Dead Space comics. I would love to. It's a great property.
Yeah, I would love to see the first game specifically made into like a 10 episode series, right? Because Isaac, what's his name, right? The engineer that went into the spaceship and trying to figure out what the fuck happened. I think that would be fucking amazing. So that would also be one other answer I had. Sorry to cut you off. Did you have another one that you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I can do this all day. You know, I'm a big comic guy. Southern Bastards by Jason Aaron, I'm in love with. There's one called Bitch Planet by Kelly Sue DeConnick, which I am a pretty big fan of too. Sex Criminals. Have I ever told you about Sex Criminals? Because it's the fucking craziest comic book I've ever read in my life, which is a woman, when she has an orgasm, she freezes time. right? And then that's really isolating and really lonely for her, right? Because she's in the middle of having sex and the guy's frozen in time too. Everyone's frozen. Until one day she hooks up with a guy and he also freezes time when he orgasms. So what do you do with this power? Naturally, you start robbing banks, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this really weird temporal sci-fi bank robbing movie or comic. And there's a lot of scenes like where the cops are breaking in and they're like, fuck, we got to have a quickie right now just so we can stop time. That would be baller. I would love that. So anyway, I have a bunch of these. I think Netflix needs to buy every single comic property, including mine.
Yeah. So people, go ahead and get on it. I want to see this become a Netflix adapted series here.
Right.
So everyone, that was all the emails I had here, at least for the week. Let me see. Yeah, that was everything. So thank you guys. And so long and farewell. This was What's in the Box, episode 29. Of course, one more time, because we got to do those shameless plug. Go to DoubleToasted.com, the official merch of Double Toasted, where now we have the T-shirt of the month, Kung Fu T-shirt J. Go ahead and get that. Christian, if you remember that segment when it happened a couple months ago, it was pretty hilarious. So glad to see it's now becoming a T-shirt. And of course, pick up all your other signature Double Toasted stuff. And as always, you can also hit us up at What's in the Box. I'm on Instagram, and so is Christian at DJ Miles Music, and Christian is at Christian.monster. There is our email, whatsintheboxdt@gmail.com. And again, I want to thank John Torres for the amazing artwork. Look at that. God damn, I look so good in that picture. Christian, you look fucking quite dapper as well.
I look drunk. So. I look drunk. Don't try to make excuses. I just look alcoholic. That's it.
Yeah, so let me go ahead and let me see if I got Christian on here. Nope, look at that. We were going out way too long again. So everyone, I just want to say, let's say goodbye to the chat one more time. Chat, thank you guys so much for joining us. We really appreciate you guys being here each and every week. You could have been doing anything else, and you said, not today, Miles. I want to see what's in the box. This was episode 29. Thank you guys very much. Until next week, we will be back. And we got some surprise guests coming in the upcoming week, so look out for that too. Until then, take care, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.